Hello, my name is Katie Saltz. I am 12 years old, and today is November 23rd, 2018. I'm speaking with my uncle, Leon, who is my name is Katie. I am 12 years old. Today is November 23rd, 2018. I am speaking with my great uncle, Leon, and we are recording this in Arab, Alabama. Okay, so my first question that I have to ask you is, my mom insisted that I ask you about the painters and the woods. I don't know what that's about.
Well, we're country people from Arab, and we lived out on the in a little area called Egypt Woods. It was called that because there were so few people there when my granddaddy and grandmother bought a farm and settled there. And there were mountain lions out there. I saw one as late as 1964. But back in the 30s and 40s, there were mountain lions. And the people called them painters. And they'd tell old stories. You'd hear the old men sitting around telling stories about hearing a painter crying in the woods at night, and it'd sound just like a woman crying, and they'd scare me to death, you know, but that's what painters were back to us mountain folks.
Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
Well, my daddy was in the Army. Katie's great granddaddy, and we traveled around all over the world and all over the U.S. But every time we'd come back home from somewhere, we'd come back home to Arab. So I grew up in a lot of different places, but mostly in Arab. Sometimes on my granddaddy's farm, and sometimes on in Army schools in Germany or Turkey or California. So it was a little mixed up and unusual way to be a kid, you know.
What advice would you give to your teenage self?
To my teenage self?
Yes, sir.
You're not going to completely lose any possibility of anything good happening in your future because you make a mistake today, unless it's a really bad mistake. But, you know, I used to worry about, we'd worry about things like failing a test or, which I didn't do a lot of, but sometimes, or not getting my fee for my towel at gym. I would just worry about it so much. Don't worry about that kind of stuff. It'll be okay.
So, like, don't stress the little things?
Yeah.
Can you tell me one of your happiest memories?
Oh, my goodness. When Lily, my daughter, was 2 years old. She was short, and I had a reclining chair, and I'd sit in it. And she'd come up and put her hands on the arm of the chair, and her nose would just almost reach the arm of the chair, and she'd look up and say, "Hold me, Daddy, hold me." And that'd just make my heart flutter, and I'd pick her up and hold her.
What are you most grateful for?
I guess all these lovely babies that we've got here, including J.R. and Katie and Joe and Rocky, but their mamas and daddies too. Because Joe and Rocky's mama is my baby. So that's the thing I'm most grateful for.
Tell me about where you grew up and what your childhood was like, if you can.
Well, you kind of already asked that, I think. I went to the first grade here in Arab. First day, we rode a bus. We lived in pretty primitive conditions. We didn't have indoor plumbing. We had electricity. I can remember, and this would be when we'd live here. We would live in Arab some of the time. But when I was like 6 years old, I started school. We lived in a house that didn't have indoor plumbing. We had a well out back. We had an outhouse. We had electric lights, but we had coal fires and a wood-burning stove to cook on. And then we'd go to the Army post. Daddy was in the Army. We'd go to the Army post and lived a very modern life. You know, we had everything electric and stoves and refrigerators and hot and cold running water and bathrooms and everything. So it was an interesting way to grow up, switching back and forth between the two, and growing up working on the farm some and getting to know what that's like, and then living in towns and cities and here and there.
Can you tell me about my grandmother from, like, your childhood?
Martha was 2 years younger than I was. And she was just a fascinating girl. And she's a little girl. And she still is. She was littler than everybody else, because when she was little, she had a thyroid condition. But then she grew out of that. But she was littler when she was real young, you know, two, three, four, five. But she was one of the gentlest natured people you ever knew. Like, she could walk up, I believe she could have walked up to a charging water buffalo and put up her hand and patted it on the head, and it would have just stopped. Dogs, big, bad, mean dogs, would just come up and lay down at her feet. Not that she couldn't get mad. She could get real mad. Her back of her neck would turn red. She had freckles, and everything would turn red. But she was just... We had our tussles, as all kids do, brothers and sisters, but she was a real sweetie pie.
Can you tell me one of the specific times she got really angry?
I remember we were living in Massachusetts, and she was two, I guess, and a 26-inch snow came. And Daddy took her, you know, of course, dressed all up in snow gear and winter gear and stuff. Daddy took her and pitched her out in the snow, and it was taller than she was. And she came up, and she was crying. And, you know, at first we thought it was because she was hurt, but it wasn't. She was just so mad. She was so mad she was crying. And she crawled out of the snow, and we all went back inside.
Did you have a nickname, and how did you get it?
Well, my daddy called me Rooster. He called me Rooster until he died, and I was 50 years old then. Nobody else ever called me Rooster. I had another one in high school, and I don't know why he called me Rooster. I think it was because I, at a certain age, when I was one and a half or two, I'd walk around pretty cocky. But also, I had in high school, I was nicknamed Jeep by a high school girl who said, with my glasses on, I had those old big, thick, horn-rimmed glasses, I looked like a Jeep. Of course, we were Army kids, so we all had been around Jeeps a lot, but I was a Jeep for a long time in high school.
When you were younger, were you close with my grandmother?
My sister? Oh, yeah. Like I say, we had our fusses, but we were... It was an interesting thing about moving around that much. If you live only a year or two or at most three in any one place, you get used to all your other friends changing every couple of years. But then there's the four of you, Mama and Daddy and Martha and me. And it's always us. And so I can remember us standing up for one another and you know, helping one another out. She helped me. I was bigger than she was. But I can remember that.
Are there any funny stories or people from when you were growing up? Can you tell me about them?
Funny stories. You might want to turn this off. Let me think about that. My daddy was a good storyteller, and he'd tell a lot of funny stories. And my granddaddy, Papa Fullerton, was a great storyteller, and he was quite a character. And he'd tell stories about things that had happened to him over the years. There was the time my daddy and he went down to Huntsville with a truckload of watermelons to drive around and sell the watermelons door to door. And they had a sign on the side of the truck said, watermelons, a quarter apiece. And they had several hundred watermelons. And they drove all through all parts of Huntsville, didn't sell but one or two watermelons. And my granddaddy, Papa, as we called him, said, pull over here. Now I gotta give me that pencil. And he took the sign and turned it over, and wrote on it, watermelons, 2 for 50 cents. You know, and if you do the math, you'll notice that that's the same price as it was before. But they put that sign on the side of the truck and went back through the same neighborhoods and sold every watermelon within a couple of hours. I always thought that one was pretty funny. And Papa would get, Martha, your grandmother, loved Felix the Cat cartoon, comic books. This is in the early 50s. And she'd ask Papa to read them to her, and he had glasses as thick as Coke bottle bottoms, and he couldn't really see to read like that, but he'd take it and he'd hold her in his lap, and he'd hold a comic book and he'd point at the picture and he'd say, meow, and he'd point at the next picture and say, meow, and he'd point at the next picture and say, meow, and he'd point at the next picture and say, meow, and about that time this noted temper that I talked about a while ago starts kicking in, and Martha got really mad at him. Of course, we're all sitting there laughing.
Did you like school when you were younger? Why or why not?
Yeah, I liked school a lot. I did all right. And, you go to school and play ball and learn stuff and... Yeah, I liked school.
Can you tell me about the work that you did in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I went up there as a representative of a local environmental group who was opposed to a nuclear waste dump being put in our neighborhood. by the Department of Energy. And I met some people who taught me how to deal with what was going on in Washington. And before it was all over, we had won, and they didn't build it, and it was because of what we did. So then an environmental group in Washington called me and hired me to come up and work for them as their lobbyist, as their representative to the members of Congress on energy issues. And so I did. And I was there for 5 years and helped write and draft some really important electricity legislation. And then I got hired by the U.S. House of Representatives Energy and Power Subcommittee of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and worked on electricity legislation. And then the Democrats lost the House, and so a lot of us lost our jobs, and I went to work at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission on electricity policy, and then at the Department of Energy as assistant to the Deputy Secretary of Energy. And then I went to the U.S. Senate and spent the last 12 years before I retired as the senior policy advisor on electricity policy for the U.S. Senate Energy Committee. Wrote lots of key legislation on electricity policy. Some of it passed and some of it didn't. Before I got there, I had been a carpenter, and I had been for a long time a musician, and in fact, at one point in my life, I was a professional chicken catcher. So I didn't have much experience in this, but after I got there, I liked it a lot. It was fun.
How do you become a professional chicken catcher?
Well, Papa, my granddaddy, had after he got older and couldn't farm, couldn't like plow the fields and all, he did what a lot of people in North Alabama did. As the economy of farming in North Alabama changed, when I was young, I remember picking cotton by hand when I was young, but planting cotton in these little farm fields in North Alabama just didn't ever make any sense, because it wasn't economical at all for cotton and corn. You need great big fields where you can produce enormous amounts. So as they got older and they figured out this economics, a lot of them began raising chickens. And my granddaddy had a house, and he raised 10,000 chickens at a time. And the company would bring the baby chicks and put them in the chicken house, and then he'd raise them for 14 weeks, I believe it was back then. It's a lot faster than that now. It's like 8 weeks. And then they'd come and catch the chickens and put them on the truck and take them off to market. Well, I got a job with the company that ran the chicken houses and sold the chickens, going and catching the chickens. You'd go in the middle of the night so they'd all be sleeping when you started. And I was a chicken catcher.
What has surprised you most about your life?
My goodness. Miss Lily. My little girl. I think. Because when she was born, it was such an amazing thing, and she just kept getting better and better and better.
What is the best vacation you've ever taken?
There's a couple. One was the first time I went to the beach with a friend and Lily's mother, and we went to Cape Hatteras and got sunburnt so bad, it was sun poison, and couldn't play in the water anymore. And there were so many mosquitoes there, you had to hold your hand over your nose to breathe. But since I couldn't play in the water, I went to a surf casting lessons and learned to surf fish and spent the rest of the week surf fishing and caught fish every day, and we ate fresh fish every day, and that was maybe the one of the best. And the other that's a competitor for the title was when Lily, my daughter, graduated from college with a degree in geology as a graduation present, we went down the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon on a raft and would camp at night on the little beaches along the river and then go through the giant rapids in the daytime on the rafts. And here we were with the guide was a geologist and Lily was a geologist, and here you are in the Grand Canyon with just, you can look up and see the walls and see the layers of rock, and they could tell you what all the layers of rock were, and it was, that was really good.
Which part of your life would you go back and live again, given the chance?
Boy, that's a tough one. This has been several. Maybe high school. Although, most kids, if they would actually tell it, are pretty unhappy in high school because they're pretty fearful of things, and I guess I was too. And if I got to know what I know now back then, I would have been much happier throughout the whole thing, and it would have been a lot more fun. So I'll stick with that one.
Tell me about the part of each day you enjoy most.
I think it's getting up in the morning and getting a cup of coffee and seeing Caroline for the first time in the morning.
What has been the biggest challenge of your professional life?
The biggest challenge? There were things that we really wanted to do that would have been really good for the country. And towards the end of my career in the Senate, which ended about 5 years ago, the Senate got so dysfunctional that you couldn't get anything done. And we were trying to get the transmission system in the country rationalized, trying to pass legislation to keep computer hackers from taking over control of transmission system and things like that, which are really important. And a lot of people, Democrats and Republicans, both agreed with them, but the place had just broken down entirely, and that was really hard work. And hard work that came to nothing. And so that was a big disappointment. And so I guess you'd say that was, you know, challenges that you met and succeeded at, I guess you couldn't count as being as challenging as the ones that you failed at.
Can you tell me where you were on 9/11?
I sure can. I was in the Senate office building having a meeting on electricity policy, the Dirksen Senate office building. And the meeting started and somebody came in and said, there's an evacuate the building alert. And we didn't know anything. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning. We didn't know anything about what was going on. But we went down to a restaurant down at Union Station, which is the big train station in Washington, D.C., and to finish our meeting about electricity policy. And looked up on TV, and just at that moment, the second tower collapsed. And then the TV showed the Pentagon in flames, which wasn't very far away. And then we started hearing about another plane. And that other plane was going to the Capitol. And if it had gone to the Capitol, if it hadn't been taken down by the passengers in Pennsylvania, it would have gone right through the building that I was holding that meeting in. So I remember very well where I was that day, yes.
Can you tell me some stories that you would tell my mom and my aunt when they were younger?
Oh, your mother and your aunt. Your aunt. Aunt Lily?
No. My Aunt Pat and cousin too.
Oh, don't tell them, but I told them stories that weren't true. I did. I made stuff up. I told them things about goblins and about, what was his name with the sword? It was on TV. I also told him some stuff that was true, but...
Can you tell me some of the true stories that you would tell him?
Oh, let me see. What would I tell to Mary and Pat? Well, I told him about a cat that we had named Carl. He was named after a John Prine song. Hare Krishna Beauregard says, Carl, take all the money. She called everybody Carl. So this cat was named Carl. And we would, he didn't live very long, but he was the smartest cat I ever saw. I remember I was in the bathroom for a purpose, and I heard him meow outside the door wanting in, so I went over and opened the door, and he came in and I closed it, and he looked up at the doorknob when I closed it, and he sat down, and by now he'd caught my interest because he was acting strange. He sat down and stared at the doorknob for a long time, just stared at it, and then he meowed again as if he wanted out. So I went over and opened the door and let him out and closed the door. And as soon as he got outside and I closed the door, he meowed again. And he came back inside. And I closed the door and went over. And he sat there and stared at that doorknob for an even longer time. And then he reached up and tried to turn it. And he couldn't. Because he didn't have thumbs, you know, his paws would just slip around it. And he immediately figured out that he couldn't do it. But he had figured out how. And he tried, and that satisfied him. Smart cat. I told them that story because they were about your age when we had that cat. Do you remember? Yeah, Carl. Yeah, you may even have met Carl. He only lived, he got run over when he was 10 months old.
It was just gray cat.
So there's
and orange
one.
Cat. It was just gray cat and orange cat when we were kids.
Yeah.
Is there any gray cat, orange cat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's beautiful names.
We had one cat didn't have a name.
So what would you like call it?
A lot of people started calling him, he was a pretty strange cat. Called him Weird Cat, but that wasn't his name. He didn't have a name.
That's what made him special.
I guess, yeah. He was strange. He never won a fight. He never won a fight, but he never quit. And he would just keep coming back till the other tomcats would get tired of the taste of his fur, I guess. And they'd give up. And so then it was like he had beaten them, although they had beaten the socks off of him every time he fought them. But they all gave up, and then it was like he had beaten them, so he was the king cat of the neighborhood after having never won a single round.
That was a strange cat.
Do you remember any of the stories about the goblins and such that you would tell?
Oh, I made that up.
Yeah, but do you remember any of the stories you would tell them?
No, I made that up when I told it to you. I got to tell you some stories, too. I wouldn't tell little kids like that scary stories. Thor. No, it wasn't Thor. Who was the guy with
He-Man?
The... He-Man. Yeah, your mama was... She had her He-Man sword, and she'd flip it out from behind her neck. Yeah. When she was about that tall. That's about as high as your belt. Not your belt, Katie.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me interview you today.
Well, thank you. I hope this does well. You were very good at it.
Thank you.
I've been interviewed before, and you did a fine job.